Welcome to the Ages of Rock podcast with your hosts, Bill Algy, Dennis Talbot, and Alan Tate. We are three guys who have one thing in common, a love of rock and roll. Our goal is to talk about all things rock. We hope you find this show intriguing, funny, and occasionally highly opinionated. Enjoy. Hey, folks, this is episode number 226, and we have our esteemed colleague from KISS FAQ, Julian Gill. How are you, dude?
So that's where my banner went, you bastard.
He's a kleptomaniac.
Hey, you know that?
Our job was to distract you, then he just snagged it and ran out the door.
Well, see, now the thing is Julian asked me at the last Rockin' Pod to watch his table, but I didn't tell him that I was going to charge him a banner fee.
That's an expensive fee for watching a table.
No shit. Hey, you know, that makes a great tablecloth, too. It's linoleum, so you can wipe it down, and there you go. Multi-purpose.
Now the best part about it is this is collectible because it's autographed.
Is it?
Julian signed it on the back before he gave it to me.
Wow.
How many beers had I had that day?
Oh, there was, I'm pretty sure, a lot.
I'm pretty sure that this came into my possession at the Indianapolis Kiss Expo a couple of years ago.
And you did have a few beers.
I bartended you pretty good.
Yeah. You did. You took good care of my beers that day.
We kept saying, don't overserve him.
Oh, it was fun. I miss doing stuff like that. Damn it.
Yeah.
I miss congregating in person. But you know what? Getting together on these shows, whether it's you chaps or with my own crew and other friends, you know, it's a lifesaver mentally just to get together and talk and see each other's faces and see each, your former banner that you haven't seen in a few years. You know, it's all good. It helps. It's medicine.
Sure. We're supposed to be in Nashville this past weekend.
No, it's actually this weekend.
It was going to be this coming weekend.
Oh, it's this coming weekend.
Yeah, because I looked at my calendar today and I seen this thing where it says Nashville Hilton 15th and the 16th.
So that, past weekend was last year's.
That was last year's. The anniversary of last year. That's correct.
Yeah. That was a lot of fun.
It was. Oh,
it was a super, super loads of fun. I'm looking forward to next year. It'll be just as, we'll just have to do twice as much fun.
Well, we've got 2 years worth of planning put into it, so by the time the next one rolls around, it should be pretty epic.
Hope so.
And we're going to have what was that, Julian, a rage jam?
Oh, that would be just do the whole album.
That's funny.
That's the jam session.
So speaking of the whole album, carrying on with our 40th anniversary album reviews, Julian chose Judas Priest's British Steel. So we will get to that in a few minutes, but before that, as always, we will talk about recent music news and album acquisitions and stuff like that. I don't know the gentleman's name, Mitch something or another, producer for Deep Purple, Iron Maiden.
Yeah, I guess I had it up.
Passed away.
Martin Birch.
Yes, passed away at age 71 the other day, so.
I didn't see that.
On the downside there, that's the only music news from the past week that I can think of.
Not a whole lot going on.
Not a whole lot going on, indeed.
There's some fun things to watch if you want to watch a train wreck, which is Chris Jericho and Sebastian Bach going at it on Twitter. It's kind of funny.
But you know, they just did a commercial. Did you see that commercial that they just did?
The two of them?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah,
it was, I think that commercial is a little bit older. I don't know how old it is.
Because somebody posted it this week.
I also wouldn't be a bit surprised to find out that that's, kind of like the Axl Rose Vince Neil thing back in the day. It's all staged for publicity.
Well, he is a wrestler.
Well, he is a wrestler. Yeah. Isn't Sebastian supposed to be dropping a new album soon?
Oh, I'm sure it's all.
Does anybody care?
Not the point.
I like them.
Yeah.
I like to be interesting people. Big mouths.
And speaking of trains, if you like the OJs, get on YouTube and type in Live from Daryl's House and OJs.
That
episode is, I listened to it today at work, and it was It's pretty good.
I'm gonna watch that. Cool. I love that show. And the only way I can get it is off the internet. But what's the channel? It's always on my following. Always talking about it. It's on.
I don't know what channel it's normally on. The YouTube video has MTV's watermark. Right. So I think maybe at one time
it was on VH1 at one time.
One of the MTV channels was playing it. Yeah. I don't know.
Axis. There's a channel called Axis TV.
Yeah, it wasn't on there. Because we used to have it. We did have it, but it wasn't on there.
Because like last weekend, they had a bunch of different documentaries about a bunch of bands, and my father-in-law brought over the list. I'm going, thank you, but I can't get this channel to rub it in.
Record them.
I got 40 sports channels that I don't ever watch, but no Axis. So anyway,
yeah. And an MTV. I watched three documentaries this past weekend.
Cool.
I watched the Go-Go's.
It's
pretty cool, actually. Yeah, really good. And it was really interesting. I had no idea that they started out as a punk band. I did not know that they were that was their background. I mean, it made sense after you listen to where they started and kind of listen to the first record and the cuts they were talking about. I mean, singing on the first record and stuff like that. It kind of made sense. And then, how they kind of morphed into the band that they became. And it was really pretty good. And then I watched Amy Winehouse. I like Amy Winehouse, a big Amy Winehouse fan. And I watched, that's okay. And I watched that. I thought it was pretty good. Watched the, it's interesting. She's one of the 27 club, right? Unfortunately, could not get past the demons. And that another one of those kids that's what happened to. But some great music that she put out. There's a segment in there where she does a song with Tony Bennett. And it's crazy. It almost gives you goosebumps. It's like, it was really cool, really meaningful for her and stuff like that. So it's pretty cool. Right. And then I watched one on Teddy Pendergrass, which I thought was, I just saw it going by and I'm like, man, that'd be kind of interesting to watch. Actually, it was really pretty good.
I like watching all of those documentaries.
Yeah, they're really pretty good.
Somebody that I'm not a fan of.
Yeah. And this was pretty good. It talked about, the band he was in before he went out on a solo tour, solos stuff and how they, one of the other band members, they all agreed in the first record they put out, he put his name on top. The other band member did, like his name and then whatever they were called. And I can't remember exactly, but it was like, oh, that caused some problems. Then they had the car wreck that ended up paralyzing him and stuff like that. And it was really cool. And the first public thing he did after the car wreck was Live Aid. With Ashford and Simpson. So it was really cool. I mean, it was really neat. And his mom was on there and gave some, testimony and stuff like that. And, it was really pretty cool. So I like you, Alan, I like watching all those. It doesn't have to be somebody I really love their music. It's just, there's always a cool story behind everything, it's pretty neat.
Well, that, and sometimes you find out, they had to deal with another band or something else gets pulled in there. It's like, I didn't know that, it's a little minutia thing. It's always cool.
Just try to figure out how Kiss gets involved into there.
It's all Kiss world,
We're just living it, right?
But yeah, it's been slow. I've been watching, I look through the things every day, and there's been nothing that's been amazing that stands out. So just everything keeps
pretty
getting
slow
back.
At the moment. Pretty
pushed
slow. Back.
Well, let's dump it. Let's jump in to the album acquisitions. What do you have, Julian?
All right. So I'm going to just start with a little bit of pimping, very gentle. I've been getting some scans together for the Aerosmith book that I'm working on. So I picked up a couple of cool Japan only compilation releases by Aerosmith. And first one is Gold Disc. Which came out in 1977 promotionally. It's got some cool
picks on there.
Cool picks. And, I just love including international releases in books because, number one, it's a cheap way of including a picture other than licensing. Second one I got is 1978. They put out Wild Platinum, which, again, these are just compilations. I think they're promotional. Yeah, this one's a promo. And they're just a fun way to kind of include some of the international discography for bands in a book and also get something that's a little bit unusual into my collection. Most importantly, since you guys love Kiss, that's come in, is the new Origins Volume 1 picture disc. So these are shipping now to everyone. I got mine a little bit early, but it's absolutely beautiful how it's turned out. They come with an insert sheet, which they'll have options for one that's signed by Ace, and mine's one of the unsigned ones.
What's the backside of the picture disc? Same picture?
That writing on it.
There you go.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
And it's a double. It's a double picture disc. So your second one is, of course, the AC.
That's cool.
And again, the back of the LP.
That's cool.
So those are for people who've ordered those. They are in transit. I think there was a little bit of a delay, you know, because of like the plague going on. But it's actually very cool. I haven't had a picture disc in donkey's years, so these are like super heavy, nicely done, and I think the package in its die cut sleeve looks absolutely fantastic. So those are three of my recent vinyl acquisitions.
Cool. I got nothing.
You got nothing?
Bill's got nothing. Doing?
No, I'm gonna really take your billfold or what?
No, there's been nothing out there, man. I've been looking at stuff, but there's
To save me from getting hate from the two episodes ago when I was harping on Ace real bad about Unmask. I ordered the Origins 2, pre-ordered it. I think it's coming out, September something, 20-something, I think. But anyway.
September the 18th. Which color did you go for?
I got the blue swirl. So I thought that was kind of cool. And so I did buy it.
Drinking the blue Kool-Aid.
I liked the Origins one. I have it on CD. I bought it when it came out when I went to Best Buy and actually bought it today. I like those. He does great jobs on a lot of those tunes. And he always picks a lot of great, you know, classic 70s, 60, you know, late 60s, early 70s classic rock songs. So they're good. I enjoy it. So, yeah, I went ahead and bought it because I was like, and I like the color discs. But anyway, I did pick up a few. I had a few from last week that we didn't, because we didn't do records last week. But I did pick up 38 Special Tour de Force. I got that. It's really good shape. Got it for $4. Yeah. I mean, how great is that?
Yep.
Speaking of which, the Go-Go's, I did pick up.
Oh, there you go.
And I got it for $5, and it's in really good shape.
Get him to quit putting those damn stickers on the front of the records, though, did you?
No, but if you use a razor blade,
they
will. I know. He told me. He says he will not stop doing that because people keep peeling them off. That's what they do. They're trying to, you know, they try to lower prices, and if they get somebody doesn't know what they're doing,
put them on the back.
I know. I've told him. He just doesn't listen. I mean, he's a nice guy, but he's just dumb sometimes. All right. I did from Ashley and M. I got the Kinks. Was it Live on the Road? Actually, it's Come Dancing on it. I haven't listened to it yet, but I do love that song. It's got also The Road Destroyer. And like I said, what was it? Come Dancing. So I thought that was kind of cool. I did another one from Ashley. I just got it today, actually. I picked up Deep Purple's Perfect Strangers. And I love this album. I think Knocking Our Back Door and Perfect Strangers both are great openers on their own, you know, side one, side two. So I do when I just picked this up like about 3 hours ago. So I haven't had a chance to listen to it. The only other one that I got, a bunch of them on order and they're being sent and it's just in right now in the quagmire of getting here. You know, I think they ship them, you know, shipping is who knows where, what's at any point, and it takes twice as long to get stuff. Excuse me. But another one I did pick up, I don't know why I got this. I was going to give this to a friend of mine at some point. But the Ann Arbor Blues Festival from 1969. It's a double live album. And it's got it's got a 20-page booklet.
Wow.
And it's got, it's just got a bunch of, this is celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Dedicated Blues Festival. B.B. King, Mississippi Fred McDowell, Howlin' Wolf. And, you know, it's one of those things is I'm not a huge blues fan, but my friend Joe, he is. So at some point I may give it to him, or just when he's down, we'll pull it out. And it just kind of adds to the collection. So something different for change.
Cool.
And that's, like I said, and then I did get, of course, I did not have a copy of this. So this little thing we've been doing is great because I've got to buy like three records to replace either my old ones or the CDs that I had of them. But I did pick this up through Amazon. It was in 180 gram. Got it for $16, I think. So not a bad deal on that. So, and it's got something interesting about it, and we'll talk about that here when we get started.
Is that the 30th anniversary edition?
No, this is just a regular. This is I can't see what the 2001.
Well, the 30th anniversary has got like a couple extra songs on it.
No, no, it does not. It's the original. Actually, and it has the, it's not the U.S. release because the U.S. release, actually, this is a U.S. release because it's sequenced different. We'll talk about that here in a little bit. The other thing, what was it? I was just thinking about it and I've lost my train of thought. Anyway, I guess I'll remember it here in a little bit. So that's all I got though for right now. Till next week, I'll have some new ones next week.
Deep Purple. That is such a fantastic album. I can't wait. I love it. Yeah. And your Go-Go's picks, you know, I was into them when they were obviously out, but it was a big thing for punk bands to do pop. Glenn Matlock, great example. Very poppy. But the Go-Go's, fantastic band. Absolutely incredible. Great songs.
I've got their first album. That's the second album. And I think I got one more. I'd have to look, but I know I've got the three. I think three of them. So anyway.
I think there were only three or four, weren't there? There weren't very many because
the first one they're sitting there.
It went south pretty fast.
It went hard. Well, was it Belinda went solo and then you had.
Well, it started before that. Jane kind of started the derailment of the train.
I need to watch that documentary. I've been wanting to watch it before it goes off. So I will watch that probably.
It was one of those situations where everybody thought they were getting paid the same and then somebody let the cat out of the bag. and they found out that people that wrote the music were getting more royalties than those that weren't, and it got
That's kind of the way it is.
Ugly.
That's the way it should be, though.
It was like, there was a little revelation there, and that just kind of started the train on the road to derailment.
Gotcha.
I want to jump back to the Ace Frehley Origins Volume 2 and Volume 1. You know, you had said that you really liked all of those covers that he did.
Right.
There was something about all of those covers, even on the Anomaly release and his other solo album that was released recently. There was always something about those covers, in my opinion, that it was almost there, but it was like something just didn't quite cut it for me personally. But, you know, they just released the Deep Purple cover that he did, and a lot of people kind of poo-pooed on that because, you know, Ian Gillan sang that song. And is it Gillan or Gillian?
Gillian.
But he sang that song. They're like, how could you possibly replicate whatever? You know, and honestly, I heard that Deep Purple song cover, and I listened to it two or three times, and it's the favorite so far, my favorite cover that Ace has done probably since Into the Night back on the first Frehley's Comet album. Or I could say Do You on the Trouble Walking album. I really like that cover as well.
It's kind of funny. I have tried to listen to the Origin 1 album and I just can't.
Don't like it.
I just don't care for it much. It's like, dude, do something original. You know, do some original stuff. It's, I don't know. It's not
he's working on a new studio album anyway. He's just doing these in between, you know, kind of just for fun, you know, just for laughs. And I must say, I thought the sound on Space Trucking was much more pleasing to the ear than the production of some of the songs on Origins Volume 1. But I will say, and you know, I think there's one cover on Origins Volume 2 that everyone is going to be talking about, that it's really going to blow people's minds. Again, go back to Space Trucking just briefly, that it reunites him with Rob Sabino, who, you know, a childhood friend. It's got a great story to it as well. And come on, Space Ace Trucking. That's super fun. Great song.
Oh, I loved all of them little ace-isms he got in there, you know, throwing in the Curly and the Space Ace Trucking.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, I heard a reference to Jindal in there. You know, I know a lot of fans were, it's like, it's Ace. You know you're going to get that stuff.
Right. Nothing surprising there.
Those fall comfortably into Ace's pentatonic wheelhouse.
Yeah. It's not that I don't like the songs. I agree with you. I think the Space Trucking thing's pretty cool. And the all the little bits of it are really neat. But just overall, it's just something that I like to hear some original stuff at too. So hopefully he's coming out with something. That'd be good.
All right.
Julian's got the inside scoop. And I'm telling you guys, we've got a
we do too.
Really bad storm, like right out there right now, and the lights are flashing.
So awesome. We're going to have a show without Bill.
If we start seeing like strobe lights, it's because.
So real quick, are listening to your show.
There you go.
So if that, you know, we're going to start playing God of Thunder.
Oh,
there you go. I'll get back there real quick. I do have Go-Go's Beauty and the Beat, Vacation, and Talk Show is the third one I've got. So
Talk Show was actually
the first one. Let's go. Let's go.
All right.
Well, I don't think it's going to last.
Let's jump into this before
Bill, look at the radar. It's gonna
before
be bad,
Bill gives birth to a kidney stone or something.
No.
So we've got British Steel is the sixth studio album by English heavy metal band Judas Priest. Released on April 14th, 1980 by Columbia Records. It was the first album to feature Dave Holland on drums. It was recorded at Startling Studios in Ascot, something or another. I should have reviewed this Wikipedia page ahead of time. But anyway, let's jump right into the review. What do you want to say about this before we start talking about the songs, Julian?
When you asked me to pick an album from 1980, this was a no-brainer. This goes back to my very beginnings as a metal fan. And we used to live in upstate New York and go to the Finger Lakes to a friend's cabin during the summer and, you know, go fishing, swimming, and all that fun stuff. And he had an older brother who was bought this album in 1980. And I remember him sitting on the end of the dock, smoking, and playing a song. And that song stuck in my head for years. Now, back then, I was listening to the Beatles and John Lennon and the Go-Go's and all that stuff. And it took me years to find out what that song was. When I really started getting into heavy metal in the mid-80s, I went back and, you know, found this song that had affected me 5 years earlier. And it was United off this album. So to this day, British Steel really is the album that is at the root of my metal experience, which I, you know, I'm just chuffed to pieces that that's the
case. Don't you wish you had Google back in 1980 something?
Yeah. it took me 5 years to find out what that song was. I remembered the melody. I would ask people, they'd look at me like I was an idiot because, you know, as we progressed through the 80s, you know, we were listening to Duran Duran and other stuff all the way up to 85 when I got Turbo. Or 86, whenever it was that came out. And then I went back and bought the rest of the catalog and pressing play on that thing and it getting to United. I was like, oh, that's who it is. I was like really pleased.
That's awesome.
That's crazy. That happened to me actually I was working out in Oklahoma City and I heard this song and it was the greatest song I'd ever heard. And the radio, you know, never half the time tells you what it is, you know. And I heard like 2-3 times, never heard what it was. It took me 6 months about later. It finally played in Evansville and it was the Toadies. Possum Kingdom.
Possum Kingdom.
I love that song, and I thought it was Cheap Trick at first a little bit because it's got a little Cheap Tricky kind of sound to it. And I'm like, no, it's not quite Cheap Trick, but you know. So anyway, it took me forever. Did Bill get swept away by the wind or what?
Well, Bill is still here. He muted his microphone and headed off to the back. But I noticed the lights in the background are turned off. So
yeah,
there he comes. But the funny thing about this album for me is I did not hear this album. My introduction to Judas Priest was the Defenders of the Faith album. And my introduction to Judas Priest was side two of the Defenders of the Faith album. So Eat Me Alive, Some Heads Are Gonna Roll, Love Bites. Those were the songs that got me into Judas Priest. And, you know, then Turbo came out. And I think it was right after Turbo that they put out the Priest Live album. So my introduction to the Priest, the songs from British Steel, actually came from Priest Live. I never heard the studio versions until after I'd heard that. So, you know, it's kind of weird after you got the faster versions and the different vocals and stuff, which we'll get to some of that sure. when we go into this. Kind of interesting. All right, track one, Rapid Fire, Julian.
You say Rapid Fire. And which track listing are we doing? We are gonna do the traditional one.
Right.
I'm going with the track list that is on Wikipedia, which follows the track list that I listen to on Spotify.
Me too. Me too.
Well, Dennis, that's probably just a good tangent for what you were going to talk
about.
Sorry.
And you know what? Listening to the two, I listened to Spotify first, then I bought the album. And I put it on side one, and I'm started it out, and all of a sudden it's, you know, it's breaking the law. And I go, wait a minute, I must have it on side two or something. And I flipped it over, and it's like going, no, that's Living After Midnight. And I go, what the hell is going on here? So then I did a little research about it, and the three tracks has been switched around on this album. The American release, you know, they put, I guess because Breaking the Law was a huge hit, so they put that on first. And but my personal opinion, and we've talked about this almost every week, this week, you know, about these albums, every time we talk about album sequencing, I like the sequencing of the original better than I do this.
Well, now, just for the record, on the Wikipedia article, it says, you know, which one was originally track sure. one, you know, right. and it tells you the differences.
Right. But no, if I'm going to sit down and listen to it in its entirety, I'd rather listen to the original. I really do. I think because of that, because of Rapid Fire sets a mood for this album. I mean, it sets a pace, you know, it gets that metronome going, you know, it's like, you're going, okay, you know, and the thing is, I like Breaking the Law. It's one of those songs though, that I did play starting in 1983. I played this song probably every gig we ever played, every practice. And between that and Living After Midnight, they're a really good song. They're really good songs. And it hasn't got to the burn factor of some of the AC/DCs and the other
right.
we've talked about. But Rapid Fire, to me, is a much better song than Breaking the Law as an opener. So there right. you go. So sequencing is no more. But I do prefer the original sequencing. So it means it's a big difference. Really?
So, well, did Julian... Julian, did you actually have any?
Yeah, so that takes us back to my point. That sets up my point perfectly because, you know, with having the American version throughout the mid-80s into the 2000s, I am more used to Breaking the Law being the opening track for this album. So in the years since the remaster came out and reverted it back to Rapid Fire, it's a weird way, and it's a much better, like you said, Dennis, a much better way to open the album. Rapid Fire is the declaration of war that the British Steel invasion is about to happen. It's just brutal. It's just, you know, without being overstated in any sense, it just throws down the gauntlet. I mean, you just have images of Rob in your head, and it's very well represented on the bonus DVD that came with the 30th anniversary edition of them performing the album in its entirety at the Seminole Hard Rock.
And you know, I've had that thing for years, and I have never looked at the DVD once. Not once.
Oh, put that on, Alan. It is fantastic. Even 30 years on, it is incredible. I love it. I was watching it right before we came on here.
Note to self. I actually, you know... It's the same thing with the rest of my CDs. I get a CD. The first thing I do is rip it into my phone or whatever. It goes on the shelf, and I completely forget about it.
Right. So that's cool.
So, Dennis, do you have anything else to add to what you've already added?
No, like I said, Rapid Fire, and Julian said it all. I mean, it sets this album up, and like I said, you better have a 1-2 punch coming after this one, because you cannot. You can't leave anybody hanging after this song. This next one better kick your ass.
That's right. So, Bill.
So I missed the intro thing, so I'll give you my little intro about how I got into Judas Priest. So my introduction to Judas Priest was on September 20th, 1979, when they opened for Kiss on the Dynasty Tour in Evansville, Indiana. I'd never really heard of them before, and went out the next day and bought Unleashed in the East. And that was the beginning. The unfortunate part is, as I think back, I didn't buy another record, though, until Screaming with a Vengeance.
Right.
So I didn't buy this record. I don't know how I missed it, but I missed this, and I missed the one after this, which was, I can't think of the name of it.
Point of Entry.
I didn't get either one of those. And actually, I thought those were older records, and I don't know why, but when I was looking at the catalog, I realized that. But I remember just being blown away, you know, at that show, and that's kind of got me into them. But, and I had never listened to this entire record until Julian picked this, and then we started going down this rabbit hole, and son of a bitch, this is a great freaking record, man. Yes, I'm like, I'm not buying the 180 gram version, because I'm not going to puss out like that. I'm going to go find an original, old school kind. I'm get that one. But the first song, I'm a first song guy, and that first song just like, kicks you right in the ass and let's go. I mean, it's awesome.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, It's a good album starter. I can't add anything more than you guys already did. I think Julian knocked it out of the park with his assessment. Yep. So the next one is Metal Gods. Julian.
You know, they were from Birmingham. And it's a very Sabbath-y song when you think about kind of the overall vibe of Metal Gods, because it takes the tempo down a little bit like God of Thunder does for Kiss, mm-hmm. And relies more on atmosphere and attitude to deliver the goods, no pun intended. I just walked straight into my own pun. Shame on me, $5 in the pun jar. But, you know, Rob Halford is the Metal God. That's his nickname. Yeah. And just the attitude, the vocal, but also, again, we talk about a perfect guitar pair between KK and Glenn working just different sides of the same attack. It's just a wonderful piece of music. And to this day, I will never, ever get bored of it.
No, I agree. For me, you know, like I said, after that first song, you better come in with something else. And this is, to me, this is the best song off the album. And not only is it the best song off the album, this is my favorite Judas Priest song of the whole catalog. I just love this song. And, you know, and the cool thing, you know, when you start listening to the stories of the recording, I guess everybody's heard the, you know, that they needed it to sound a little more mechanical, and they wanted that robot sound, you know, they wanted it. So they went into the kitchen area and got this thing full of silverware, and they're just slamming it on a table, you know, in time with the drum, you know, and it's shit like that. It's just, and then you sit there and it's a driving song. I really, really like it. Yeah. You know, except they couldn't have made it better.
Yeah. To your point, it's that 1-2 punch. And it's just so, it's kind of funny. Rapid Fire just like on you the entire time, and Metal Gods is more, it slows it down like what you said, Julian. And it just gets dark. It's just like, you know, it's really a great song. I'm telling you, it was hard for me. You know, I'm glad we're not playing what's your least favorite song on this record, because it's going to be tough.
Well, this is one of those songs that is on the Priest Live album. And having heard that first, you know, when they do the chorus with the Metal Gods, the first time they do it, it's down here. The second time they do it, it's up here. So the first time I heard the studio album, it didn't go up here to the second through around, you know, and that kind of threw me off, you know, but still a great song. And I think I'd read the story about how they used the silverware to make the mechanical or the stomping noises of the Metal God or whatever. Mm-hmm. And if I remember correctly, wasn't this recorded in John Lennon's old house or something?
It was Ringo Starr's cutlery.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, that's cool.
Amazing.
All right.
So up next, we've got Breaking the Law, which every cover band on the planet has had to do whether they wanted to or not.
I like that song.
Julian,
it's fun to play. You know, I've got my little backing track set up for when I'm just bored and want 45 minutes of guitar. This is in there. And it's just so fun because it's different Priest. If you think back to like 1980, this is really kind of a bridge between old Priest and new Priest. You've got some of the older stuff kind of represented a little bit more with Rapid Fire, Metal Gods, but this shorter, poppy, hooky, you know, Priest is, you know, kind of akin to some of the other stuff that they'd done as kind of B-sides elsewhere, Green Man Lishi, pure pop. And now they're expanding into a different area. But you know what? I don't care. I don't care how many times I see the video. I don't care how many times I hear a cover band play it. I don't care how many times I put on my guitar rig and play it. It's just fun. It's super fun to play. And it's super fun to listen to, done properly.
And it's got the music video, which by today's standards is terrible, but back then it was pretty high tech.
Yeah, Breaking the Law is a great song. You know, it is a bit, it's not, it is poppier than than, or more radio friendly, if you want to say it that way, or more of a, you know, a mainstream rock song than it is more, you know, than the first two songs. But it is a great song. Like I said, it is a song that I've played a million times. Don't mind playing it again. Actually, we could have been almost a Judas Priest tribute band back then. We did this one, Grinder, and we actually did the Ripper. So it was a triple threat. But you just don't get tired of playing a Priest song. You know, they're just so good. It's like I say, it's not my favorite song on the album, but it's up there. There's not a really bad song on this album. You know, there's songs that I don't like as much as Metal Gods, but it's still, there's no skippers in this album.
Bill? Nope, I'd agree. This is my favorite song off the album. And it's just, I think it might be the pop piece of it that does it. But when that song starts, it's just like, get it in the air and you're ready to go. And it's, yeah, great song, man. Great tune. Nothing else to add.
Much like Bill, I'm a radio guy. I always have been, you know. So those pop metal radio songs, every time, you know. And this probably is my favorite song off of this album. Not as good as the Live Priest version, though. No, just kidding.
No, and if you don't like it for being too poppy, at least it's only 2.5 minutes, so you won't suffer for long.
True. Yeah,
it's almost as long as a
Van Halen record.
Van Halen.
This is the shortest song on the record, though. That's for sure.
It is. I guess I just never paid attention. I didn't realize it was only 2.5 minutes long.
Right.
So up next, we've got The Grinder. Julian.
Every album needs a love song. And Priest just over-delivers again with Attitude. And, you know, it's like the symbiotic twin of Metal Gods. Right. The Grinder. And I can't quite roll my accent anymore like Rob does when he introduces it. But again, we go back to kind of my personal relationship with these songs. But this is another one I just play on the guitar all the time because I love the riffs. I love the little lead breaks that I can actually handle as a mediocre guitarist. And again, it's the attitude. It is dark. It is grindy.
Right. Looking for meat. And you know, the thing is, you know, and of course, you know, the Rob Halford now, you know, and the whole point is, and I've said this before, you know, Rob, you know, when he came out, I don't know why he actually had to come out, because if you go back and you watch everything he ever did live, I mean, he didn't try to hide anything. I mean, he had that prance, he had this, he had that, his body movements, mannerisms. I mean, he never tried to hide it, but it, you know, it's still coming out of the left field going, really? He's gay, you know. And then you start listening to the words and they're going, what was he trying to say there? You know? But anyway, yeah. No, but this is a great song. And like I said, it is, you know, whatever Breaking Law does to kind of shake it up and make it a pop sound, Grinder just comes back in and just starts turning it out again. You know, it doesn't
put it in the meat grinder.
The meat grinder. But no, and like I said, another song that I love playing on the guitar. It's those riffs are just so, I mean, they're just catchy and they're fun and it's great. And
yeah,
Bill.
Well, definitely. That's what I was going to say. That sticking Breaking the Law in the, you know, in this track listing, the way this is, I'm sorry, putting Grinder there right after Breaking the Law is just, that's just right back to it. Let's, okay, we did a little poppy thing, and now we're just going to go back and melt your face. So, let's move on. Let's go.
All I've really got to say about The Grinder is those lyrics just.
Well, it's funny. I was listening to it on the way home from work today, and I'm like, I listened to this record. I don't know. Whenever we do these, I listen to it multiple times, and sometimes I'm just listening to it. You know, just sure. It's on, and I'm kind of listening to it. I'm just listening to the music, and,
right.
You know, I'm not really listening to the lyrics necessarily. But on the way home, I listen to the lyrics, and I'm like, what'd he say?
I'm like, I'm not skipping. I'm backing up. I'm
wait a minute. What did he say? So I, and
did
it was,
he say what I think he
and
said?
It was half. It was almost finished when I picked that because I'd listened to it at work earlier. I'm like, right. Oh, well, I'll check it out. So when I got in the car and I heard the end, and I listened to the beginning of it again. I'm like, oh, Okay.
Now, I got it. On a side note here, Bill, we can see the lightning behind you.
Yeah, it's, yeah.
We're it's watching the light show.
Oh, yeah, right. The window back there. Yeah.
Yeah. Up next, we've got United. Talk to us, Julian.
Yeah, I've kind of said that, you know, in talking about my introduction to this album, that I think everyone has a seed in their musical history, something that set them on a path or really started them. And this is that song for me. It's so personal in its meaning. It's not even a favorite song on the album. It continues very much in a similar vein to Grindr and, you know, a little bit more up-tempo. But I think this one's a real lost opportunity. Mid-80s, when bands like Aerosmith were hooking up with rap bands, I think a rap band, could have done something with a crossover with United. I'd love to kind of hear those two genres collide on this track.
Right. Personally, this is, I mean, if I had to pick a least favorite on this album, it's this song. And the only reason being is I don't like the chorus that much. I think the verse of the song sounds great. I mean, I know what they're trying to go for. They're trying to go for one of those anthem, like a rock anthem type song, or a metal anthem is what I'm thinking they're going for with that chorus. But I like the song during the verse a lot. It's the chorus that kind of turns me off a little bit. It's not enough to make me skip it, but it's just not my favorite song on the album. And like I said, I think this is the last song on the first side of the album. So,
correct.
Yep. But not a bad song. Just not my favorite.
Yeah, my notes say rock anthem. Period.
There you go.
That's all it says. I like this song.
I kind of feel the same way. I think it has a very anthemic theme to it. I get your point on the chorus itself, but for me personally, it doesn't detract from the song. I really like the song.
Right. And do you think maybe it was influenced just a little bit by them touring with Kiss the previous year? You know, maybe. The big anthems in the arena and Paul Stanley doing his emceeing, you know, bringing the electric circus together. And, you know, some of the stuff that certainly happened in England at the end of the 70s where society was divided, you know, lots of different messages in there, but a little bit turgid.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So after that, We Will Rock You came out just a couple of years before this too, right?
We Will Rock You? No, was it after? Way before.
Yeah. But I mean, it wasn't after. So no. That whole rock anthem thing, Another One Bites the Dust, came out the same year. I mean, that whole anthem thing was kind of on target.
Right.
That was my connection.
Yeah, I mean, I could see where they wanted to make one of those songs, and I think that's what they're shooting for. They're shooting because they're kind of big rock anthem. People can sing along with, you know, and that kind of deal. But
it was a single too. Yeah, but obviously didn't get a video, I don't think, and obviously did not do quite as well as the other two. So,
right, exactly.
All right, let's Alan. Flip that record over, and if you have the reissue, we're going to "You Don't Have to Be Old to Be Wise," Juliet.
Yeah, this is probably, if I have to pick a least favorite, going to be my least favorite on this track, because it seems out of time and out of place on this album. This one really seems rooted in 1977 and that earlier era rather than the 80s Priest. So it's a good song. It's fine. It just doesn't do a lot for me and feels like it's kind of a leftover from, you know, Sin After Sin.
This is probably my second least favorite on the album. It's a good song. I think for an opener, it's not a good for a second side opener. I don't think it does what it should do. It's not a horrible song. And I think Julian's correct on that. It does sound like an older song. It almost sounds like something that they had left over, you know, and just, you know, let's bring this back and let's try this again, you know, but it doesn't have the same kind of feel to, like you said, the newer Priest that's coming out and the stuff that's coming in the future. You know, this goes more of a slapback than it does going forward. Billy.
Bail.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was not the, if I was opening side two, that's probably not the one I would pick, but to me, that's kind of probably an ending song the last song on the album, not the first song on this side. Still, I like the song. It's just, it's okay. It's fine. It's not a skipper. Yeah. Actually, I don't think this record has a skipper on it. So
no, I don't.
Well, the original album, side two, started with Living After Midnight. Those two songs are just switched.
Right.
So kind of what you were saying, Bill, originally Living After Midnight was a starter, so it didn't start. So had a little bit better of a start back then, but I don't know why they resequenced it. But and I have nothing else to add about that song. It's probably is my least favorite on this album. But kind of agree with Julian there. Up next, Living After Midnight, track number 6 on original U.S. release.
Here's my guitar, another one. Again, really fun to play. And I think, you know, the point that you just made, Alan, about the switched, you know, track orders, mm-hmm. I think the Americans who did switch the orders and made this the first song on side two were very singles oriented always. So those usually are often led off albums. And that was the right way to go for this album because it needed that upbeat song to kick off side two. And Living After Midnight, again, it's timeless. It's a classic. It's right. On so many compilations. It's been butchered by so many cover bands. It's not a difficult song to play either. Again, it comes back to playing, not just listening to it. It's fun. Really fun song, but again, it's kind of fitting into trying to break into new markets for the band and a little bit outside their grinding image.
And I think too, and it's a sing along. You know, everybody when you're anywhere hearing it play, either on a cover band or on the radio or at an actual Priest concert, everybody's singing along with it. You know, and everybody knows the words. You know, Alan and I, this last band, you know, we were playing it and it was one of our better songs. It still sounds fresh. It's a song that, you know, came out in 1980, but you know, here in 2020, it still rocks balls. It has no dust on it. It still sounds fresh. And that's
about it. Get no dust on it because it's too busy rocking balls.
That's true. That's true. But I mean, like Julie said, it's just a fun rock song. And good for them. Alan.
How about Bill?
Oh, Bill. I keep that's going. All right. I'm going around my screen.
He doesn't. I get it. It's not. It's not a problem.
I'm retarded.
don't start. This is probably my second favorite song on the record. And again, we talked about this stuff on the radio stuff, and that's where it came from. Right. But again, it's one of those songs that you can't turn it up loud enough. Yeah. 11 ain't gonna cut it. I mean, it just 11 won't work.
Bill's listening to it, and so is the neighbors.
So is the neighborhood. So yeah, it's to me, it's kind of funny because when I've not listened to this record before today, and it's just this is one of those records that every song just needs to be played really, really, really loud, like really loud. So it's a great song.
This is the only song in the history of any song that has ever, ever been written and recorded that I can play the drums on, the bass, rhythm guitar, and the lead guitar, and sing the damn thing. This is the only song that I ever bothered learning the lead guitar part on, because in my old cover band, you know, we were all switching instruments, and I'm like, I'm going to play lead on one song, and that one is easy enough, I can do it. So this one ranks pretty high on my list of Judas Priest songs. The Rage.
What did I say? If there's a rock and pod jam with a Priest song, it's got to be this.
The Rage.
The guitar bits in it are just exquisite. The bass. And I was thinking of you, Hal, when you kind of mentioned, you know, that, yeah, you'd be down with a pod jam for The Rage. I just saw you on stage holding your bass, playing that line. Again, you get into a kind of a different feel for Priest. It's very restrained, epic, big, dark, brooding Birmingham, black country metal with a lot of little nice nuances as well with some of the lighter pieces. So this is my pick on the album.
Let's do it.
I play it. I love it. Can't sing it, but there you go.
Hey, it doesn't stop me.
Yeah. No, I love the song. It's like I said, it's not a rapid fire. It's not a heavy, fast speed metal, or not speed metal, but it's a fast song. It's a driving force of a song. And I like Rob's voice, and that is just, you know, freaking amazing. And I like that songs where he's a little bit, off the top of my head, I can't think of the ones I'm thinking of in my head, but the ones that are a little bit slower, a little bit, you know, he's really like singing to it, you know, getting into it. And it was one that I really hadn't heard that much until I started listening to this album earlier in the week. And it's one of those ones that, you know, I don't think the Rage has never been on. It wasn't on Unleashed, was it, or any of those. So, and it's, you know, it's not a radio hit or anything. So the only way you're going to hear it basically is if you had British Steel, or if you, you know, listen to it on Spotify, whatever. And it's one of those songs I just never really listened to that much. This week I've got a big appreciation for it. I really do. It's a really good song. Probably on this side of the album, it's probably my favorite song, even better than Living After Midnight. And it's just because Living After Midnight has a little bit of that, you know, overplayed factor for me, but that's doesn't make it any worse. It's just, you know, between listening to it and playing it, I just, the Rage is a little newer to me. So Alan.
Bill.
Or Bill. God damn it. It's like you look at your picture and I was like, son of a bitch. I'll shut up now.
For me, this was, you know, Living After Midnight, I thought is a great song. And the Rage just goes back to that, you know, fist and just that drive. It's got that drive and just, you know, I don't know. There's something about it. I can't figure out what it is, but it does, you know, when you're driving in the car, listen to it, you just kind of have that, I don't know. It just kind of gets your fist pumping and your blood going. And it's not Living After Midnight to me, but it still is a great song to follow that, in my opinion. Now I know that I don't know what I'd have done. I guess I'd have to listen to the different sequence, and maybe I would just be thanking the Lord that it was coming after the other, after you don't have to be old to be wise if the sequence was reversed like it should be. So, but it's a good song though. I like it a lot.
I don't have anything else to add to this song really, except for if we do the Rage Jam, we need to get Chris Senzak on guitar.
There you go.
Hey, so Bill, we've been trying to get that guy on guitar for every podcast and he won't do it.
So Bill, if you're listening to the Rage and you come across a bunch of protesters trying to block your way on,
yeah, they're done.
What's happened to that one?
Hood
that are grinder
ornaments.
Yeah, like, at least if you get to the right part of the song, because Rob's vocal starts out pretty mellow. Bill,
that's true.
You
got
to get to the right point.
His rage is building towards the end. I mean,
well, I don't think it'd be protesters. It would just be people in front of me that are not letting me be where I want to go. So if those are the protesters, yeah, anybody, then, you know, whatever.
Little old ladies with walkers.
If you're stuck in traffic, you just roll down your windows and start singing along to Grindr.
Yeah. That's true. I forgot. Yeah. It's a good one.
That's funny.
Maybe that's what we should do. You know, back in the day, they'd torture people. They would just play metal, right? So they did. You know, that's how they tortured. That's how they tortured people before.
Yeah. Been tortured.
All right.
Like, strobe lights and metal.
Can you turn it up a little bit?
Leave that on 12, please.
Yes.
Excuse me, sir. Can I have another?
Yeah.
All right. The last song on the original release is Stealer. Julian.
Yeah, Stealer. Great way to end the album. It's up-tempo, but it's also got attitude. So it combines all the elements that have kind of been introduced onto a Priest album. And again, this song is another one I love playing. A great riff, but also it's a great representation of the fantastic production by Tom Allen on this, which was his first studio work with the band. I guess Unleashed in the East technically was in the studio to a certain extent, but right, still first proper new songs. Just love the sound of it, crisp, attacking, but maintaining all the attitude and aggression without being overwhelmingly dense.
Gotcha.
Dennis.
There you go. There we go. I'm not the only one. I agree with, I could just say ditto, you know, as far as what Julian said. I mean, a great ending to the album and just an absolute classic Priest song. I mean, it's got everything that a Priest song needs in it to be a great song. And so the album does not, you know, limp its way out. You know, it just kicks you in the ass one more time. And then,
you said limp.
Well, some albums just kind of limp out, you know, kind of going out. But no, they go out with a bang. It's a great song. Bill.
Sure.
Get it right this time.
No, I don't really have much to add. It's a great ending song. It kind of is good, kind of wraps up the whole record. And it does leave you, here's some what we're doing now, and let's see what the next record's going to look like.
Pretty much what Bill said.
Yep.
Now, having said that, do we want to discuss the studio track on the bonus album? Or the Thank God. All I will say about that is it was recorded during the 1985 Turbo Sessions.
That's not accurate. It was recorded during the 1985 Twin Turbo Sessions and should never have been put on this album. Neither should the B-side, the other one, Grinder from 84, should not have been.
No shit.
That is at least a better representation of the song than the live 87 Fuel for Life tour.
When I listened to this and I heard Red, White, and Blue, I didn't realize at first that it was a bonus. And I'm like, how could they possibly end a record like that?
I don't like it.
It don't matter how much turd polish you use, it's still a turd.
It is. It's a turd. Yeah, my new album I got.
Well, I guess we are going to discuss that song.
Yeah, I deleted it off my playlist. I like the remaster and the sound of that, right. But both of those B-sides, I think I moved them into some other folder that never gets played. They don't do a thing for me. I would have rather, you know, all that stuff, they kind of put one from each of them on several albums when they did the remasters. I would rather that they revisited the Twin Turbo's concept and kind of done Turbo and Ram It Down and the Twin stuff packaged a little bit more intelligently and leave these albums alone unless you're going to just put a second live CD from that era.
That makes good sense. Well, I think that's going to wrap up this episode. Before we roll out of here, though, yes, Julian.
Go ahead.
Can
I ask one more question?
Yes.
So far out of the albums that we've done so far in this 80s releases of 1980 records, how does this one fit? This one actually has been my favorite one that we've done so far. I think it's the best one that we've personally, I think there's no skips. I really like it. I mean, it's been my favorite of the 1980 releases. Just thank you, Julian. I appreciate you bringing that in because it's.
So, Julian,
Back in Black again.
Do you know what we've reviewed? Julian, do you know what we reviewed so far?
Oh, give me the rundown. I'd love to hear what you guys have covered so far.
So the first record, go ahead, Alan.
We did Back in Black, and I'm not doing them in order.
That wasn't the first.
No, Van Halen was the first one.
Yeah, Van Halen, Women and Children first, yeah.
We did Back in Black. We did Kiss Unmasked. And Queen's the Game. I think that's all that we've done up until this episode.
All right. Yeah. It's been my favorite so far, this one. So.
Yeah. That's a great selection of albums with the exception of Unmasked. You know, but.
Hey, Jason, suck on that.
I think I'm with Dennis. Out of those, I'd much rather listen to this album for eternity than any of the others.
It's been a pleasure for the last week listening to this off and on. I don't sit around and go, oh, I got to listen to that again. It's like, oh, I get to listen to that again. You
know? Well, for me personally, Back in Black is my number two all-time favorite album. So that was my favorite review, and this is my second favorite review.
Yeah, I'm with
that. Both of these albums are really good, strong albums that I really like. The Unmasked album, we all know how I feel about She's So European. You know, that right there just sinks that. And a couple of those A songs, not so much.
Torpedo It?
Torpedoes it, yes, thank you.
Just wondering, curious about that.
And yeah, for me, this is Van Halen record.
That's number five.
I like that album.
It's got a couple of moments and wonderful moments, but
yeah, first two songs after that, there's no moments.
It's mostly filler and not enough killer.
Yeah, I would agree. So for me, this is number two. No, AC/DC is number one. This is like number 1.5. Not even two. I mean, it's They're close.
We got one more that's, I know it's going to come, it's going to be coming down the pike, and it's going to be pretty close.
I'm looking forward to that one too, because I'm pretty sure we're thinking about the same album.
So what's that one?
We'll discuss it after we we'll quit recording.
Well, there
we don't want to influence any of our guests.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And on that note, Julian, pimp your Kiss FAQ and your Aerosmith book and whatever else you've got going on.
Yeah. So just quickly, working on Aerosmith tour history. Again, like the Kiss stuff, I've done mainly newspaper articles so everyone can get a contemporary local view of how the band was viewed 1973 through 85. We stop before Done With Mirrors is recorded because, well, the Geffen years don't really count. And if there's a volume two, then there will be. And you can find me on the Kiss FAQ podcast. And we're also now doing a non-Kiss podcast called Look, It's Rock and Roll. So I do thank you all for having me on your show and talking about another album that I really love.
All right.
Good to have you, man.
Stay around for a bit.
Visit you guys, or you guys visit us on agesofrock.com. Check out our social media and our past episodes. Till next time, peace out, folks. Thanks for listening to the Ages of Rock podcast. If you haven't done so already, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, like us on Facebook, and most importantly, tell all your friends. Remember, you're never too old to rock. Until the next episode, peace out, folks.